It's a very special Billy Squire Christmas. 806 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Sean Sullivan, Dalton Orwig. Phones are open at 343-0106. 343-0106. A couple things I want to get to here. Number one, we have some questions about the train deal. I've got texts about Top Golf this morning. Oh, yeah, a lot in impeachment, of course. But the train deal. I want to go through that because we played that clip. I interviewed John Sharp yesterday, was at the Mobile City Council meeting, and at that meeting, other than talking about a couple, you know, variances and liquor licenses and all those things that they do, they mentioned the Moon Pie drop, mm-hmm. and then the other big story was funding for Amtrak service to Mobile. Now, this is a subject we've talked about many times, and this is now back up because there's a finance committee is meeting tomorrow, and they're going to look into whether the city could come up with $3 million for I'm going to call it a rider subsidy. It's not because everybody thinks $3 million, okay, that's going to be for building the train station. It's not. And the train station idea has now been moved to maybe Brooklea, thereby where the downtown airport is going to be. But it would be $3 million to meet a federal grant. Like often there's federal grant money, but you have to match to get the federal grant money. And that money would subsidize if the ridership is not what they expect it to be, or the ticket prices are below where they expect them to be, then you would have to subsidize the total amount it costs for operations. And this is what John was reporting on. I'll run a little clip here. This is from yesterday's Midday Mobile. I was talking to John Sharp about this. And in his story, here's the quote I was working off of. He said, city council members were asked Tuesday to subsidize a local match to a federal grant that passenger rail advocates believe will not cost more than $3 million over 3 years. The city commitment would not be needed till 2023, which is the year that the service connecting New Orleans to Mobile is expected to restart. He then went on to say that this is a worst case scenario for funding, and I asked him about that. $3 million, you said, a 3-year commitment of $3 million under the worst case scenario. What does that mean?
That means that ridership is very low, very poor, and the ticket costs are you know, we're charging $15 to go one way to or $18 to go one way to New Orleans. Under a scenario that, according to the Southern Rail Commissioners, is more likely, where the ticket prices are going to be around $30. That would include the ticket price and then whatever you buy on board the train. And that would be one way between Mobile and New Orleans. And they're estimating a ridership of around 80,000 people. They're talking that the commitment would be much lower, something around 300,000 a year, starting in year one, which would be, again, in the year 2023. So this is not money that would have to be removed from one pot of funding currently and placed into something else. It would be something that the city would budget for 3 years out. So we're kind of, we'll see what the council has to say. Again, the Finance Committee's meeting Thursday at 3:30 to go over this proposal.
Okay. All right. So that's the current iteration. Now, Cameron on the text line says, can y'all give me a rundown of why the train didn't happen last time? I remember you had Stephen McNair on talking about it, but I can't remember why it didn't get the support. Well, last time the money was coming from the governor, and this is so confusing, but the matching money was going to come from the state last time. Now they're asking the city, but it was going to come from the state. And Governor Ivey said, if I remember, and paraphrasing here, she didn't hear the support from the local community, meaning I think it would be in that district, which was Adeline Clark, didn't send the request for funding on this, if I remember this correctly. So the governor used that as cover for not sending the money in for the project. But behind the scenes in this has been opposed by the Port of Mobile and Director Jimmy Lyons. We need to get him back on the show because of the worry of what it does to the freight traffic in and out of Mobile. One of the issues they had talked about is with the train station being there at basically right in front or behind the tracks at the convention center. They worried about how that would affect the traffic. Now they're talking about moving the train station down to Brooklea. That takes that off, but now there's still concerns from the Port of Mobile about what this would mean for freight traffic in and out. So they have the governor's ear in this, which may have been the reason why the governor wasn't. I was just looking for an excuse of why she wasn't sending funding for it. But Mississippi and Louisiana have already done their part. They're funded. I think Mississippi, by the way, as I lament, you know, we talked about the Maws rate increase and all that. Mississippi used Restore Act money for this. Alabama, I mean, the rest of our state, what happened? What could be done down here with Restore Act money that we didn't have? But they used Restore Act money. I don't know how Louisiana financed it, but they've got, and they even had a bigger share of the financing. They've got theirs done. Alabama's a lone holdout. So conceivably, this train could reopen 2023, but be not coming into Alabama. Is $3 million, you know, too much? I mean, the city has burdened itself before with other costs. I got to tell you, from just a you know, looking at the books, I'm worried about that. But I'm also, to be honest, I love the idea of passenger rail service into Mobile, especially if we could get it going on east. The idea of loading the family and being able to go down to Disney would be fantastic by rail, or connecting out to go through the west. I've always wanted to take the family on a big train trip around the country one summer. So, the dreamer in me loves that idea, but I do worry about the city getting into something that may not pay off.
Yeah, or even going west to stop in New Orleans. I mean, there's so many options there. And that's interesting, stopping it by the by Brooklyn, having it go through there. Of course, I would put it right there near the new airport.
Right, so you get this idea of, you know, you fly in and then get the train, or somebody could take the train from New Orleans and fly out of Brooklyn. Yeah, I mean, you know.
Yes.
If they didn't want to go out of Louis Armstrong, I don't know.
So I'm wondering, you know, if we don't put the money up, but these other states have, would we put it off for everyone else, or would they find a way to get it to run through Alabama and we just wouldn't have any part of it?
No, I don't think it would go, because one of the infrastructure issues, that something needs to be done. I do not know it. Somebody probably is better versed in this, but something has to be adjusted with the tracks. I don't know what it is. I remember somebody telling me that at some point. So we'll watch it. But the Finance Committee meets tomorrow. They talk about it, and then it would come back as a recommendation for the council, and we'll see how they vote on it. They have to get it done by the end of this year. Mm-hmm. It has to be done by the council meeting that is, what is that, New Year's Eve? Or it won't be, New Year's Eve is a Tuesday. Yeah, it has to be done by New Year's Eve, or Alabama won't get in on this deal.
Interesting. And John Sharp, he wrote a lot about this on AL.com, but also if you want to hear the entire interview with Sean and John from yesterday, head on over to the website, fmtalk1065.com, and it's loaded there in the podcast section.
All right. And Hal asked, why not use a GM&O building? Hal? Because it was a train station. Why would you use it again as a train station? Hal, I asked that question. Nobody's ever been able to give me a solid answer. There's somebody they have given me answers, but Hal, it's nothing that stuck with me.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Why don't we just, build a Topgolf and run the Amtrak right through the Topgolf?
Our brains work the same way, because I was looking at all the texts we had, and I was going to say maybe we could, because somebody's asking me why Samuel L. Jackson was in town yesterday. You got pictures of the mayor giving him the key to the city. My point is, I wanted to start the rumor. Samuel L. Jackson is working for Topgolf and was in town to promote bringing Topgolf to Mobile.
Interesting.
Now, that is completely made up. That is not factual, but spread that rumor. Samuel L. Jackson in town to promote Topgolf.
That's a great rumor.
And trains. He was in on behest of Amtrak and Topgolf.
That'd be awesome.
That's what I've heard, y'all. That's what I think is, that's the word I'm getting. My cousin told me.
And the credit card that he's constantly on television promoting. I'm sure he was throwing that around the city when he took that picture with the mayor. I wonder if there's, I need to check it out, if there's like a new movie being filmed or what. I'm surprised that Nicolas Cage wasn't also in the picture, if that's the case. Maybe it's gotten to the point where Nicolas Cage has been to Mobile so many times that he was probably in the same area, just no one gets a picture with him.
It's like, it's just Nick Cage. If we brought Seagal back to town or something, we'd have a story to talk about. All right, checking in with Jeff Poor when we come back. Also, your text at 343-0106. So we go from Squire to Thorogood.
That's the man right there.
I like it. I like some some rock and roll Christmas. All right. So speaking of Christmas, obviously you realize you're a week out here from Christmas Day. Don't just get any gift. Get a great gift here in the last week, and do that with Omaha Steaks. Give a holiday gift that families across America have loved for over 100 years. That's Omaha Steaks. And right now, if you'll go to omahasteaks.com and enter the code Sullivan in the search bar to order their favorite gift package, the gift everyone will love, for only $69.99, you're going to get four 6-ounce bacon-wrapped filet mignon, four premium pork chops, four Omaha Steak burgers, four potatoes au gratin, four caramel apple tartlets, an Omaha Steaks signature seasoning packet, plus for y'all a free 6-piece cutlery set and a cutting board, so you get all the delicious food and the free cutlery set that they're going to enjoy for years to come for only $69.99. Omaha Steaks are the most tender, the most flavorful, and you can only get steaks of this quality from Omaha Steaks, America's original butcher. So don't wait. If you want to take advantage of this offer and get your gift there before the holidays are over, go to omahasteaks.com, type Sullivan into the search bar to order the gift everyone will love. Order the favorite gift package today. All right. Y'all say hello to our buddy Jeff Poor from Lanyap, Breitbart, Yellowhammer News, the Jeff Poor Show on WVNN, and a man that, unlike the politicians, has really been to all counties in Alabama, all 67, and you said more than once on a lot of them.
Twice at least on all of them, I would say.
Pretty awesome. Pretty awesome. Jeff Poor for governor.
No.
Okay, just trying. All right, so today, finally, all the talking, all the wondering, all that, today it's the foregone conclusion of the articles of impeachment vote in the House.
And I have been watching cable news this morning. Did you know this is only the third time in American history that this has ever happened? It must be pretty serial, guys.
Well, okay. So it is of note just saying that this is a rarity in our system. I wonder if what's happening now will make that a footnote, that going forward this will be used for political reasons again, you know, and it could happen with Republicans weaponizing it against a Democrat.
Yeah, I think so. It breaks a precedent that, well, unless and this is a big if the Democrats pay a big political price in 2020, then I don't think you see it. But if they are successful and they score a bunch of victories and they defeat Donald Trump, yeah, I think you'll see it more. I think you'll see Republicans try to use it against the Democrat president more. That it's a foregone conclusion then. And think about this. As much as we were told that George W. Bush was so terrible, they never tinkered with the impeachment idea. Obama, I don't think they could have gotten away with it, because obviously you would have had, you know, the race question, and impeaching the first African-American president would have been a bad look. But this is uncharted territory for the Democrats, at least. The Republicans, I'm not so sure they paid that serious of a price with it. But this is, if it pays dividends, that's a big if. It could go the other way, and it looks to me like it's trending the other way, then this could be the new normal.
Okay, so let's talk about the next step. First of all, actually, let me stay with the House part of it for a second. What do you think how many defections do you think the Democrats have when they vote today?
I'd be surprised if it gets into the double digits. Okay. But that's somewhere in that ballpark, 8, 9, maybe 10.
Okay. It was last week Speaker Pelosi saying, we're not counting the votes, we're not whipping the votes, I about fell out the chair. Going, sure you're not. Because, I mean, she wants to have, you know, if she was pulled or cajoled into this, the more Democrats that sign on, the closer to a plurality of Democrats she had, or unanimous vote from Democrats, the better she probably feels in bringing this.
Yeah, and you know, you got to give it to Nancy Pelosi. I thought she would have lost a lot more. Everyone likes to talk about these 31... Democrats that wanted Trump districts. Well, she's gotten most of those, if not all but a few, to walk the plank on impeachment, so to speak. You know, it feels an awful lot like the Obamacare vote, the way this is being handled by the Democrats. And they paid a price in 2010, but a presidential election much different than a midterm election, much different without a Democrat in the White House. That remains to be seen. I think that's the key to all of this.
Once the House votes today to impeach and it makes its way to Senate, what do you expect? There's been talk initially the president wanted this to be drawn out and call witnesses to the trial, and then Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham got involved and said, no, we need to make this as short as possible with no witnesses. Which direction do you think they go?
They want this to go away. The thing about the members in the Senate, they're appropriators more than they are legislators. They don't want a big, drawn-out process. This is a distraction from the important things like figuring out who's going to get what in the National Defense Authorization Act. This is a distraction from fundraising for the 2020 election. You know, and we laugh, but the fundraising is sort of where Mitch McConnell derives his power. He could fundraise for these candidates all over the country and help them in their reelection bid, and then they're beholden to him if he, you know, as majority leader later on down the line. He's in a tough reelection fight on his own, and they're trying to make this a big deal in Kentucky, but Mr. McConnell always manages to eke out a victory. It's never overwhelming. It's never anything big. He always does. I think they want this behind them. They think they want to get this out of the way, and they want to look at what they think are the priorities for the Senate as a whole.
Okay. As that, you look at the question, I've asked the question of Senator Jones a couple times on this. I know I'm not the only one, and I think if he's supposed to be on later this week, I'll ask the question again. I saw something in a report from, I think it was a CBS station up in Birmingham, that he had answered very similarly to the other iterations of this, where he said, well, I need more information, I'm studying it. But he said, and I'm paraphrasing here, I don't have it in front of me, that impeachment was bad for the country or something. Is there any tell in that he's hedging, or is that just a one-off?
Maybe. I could see him being among a few Democrats that vote against impeachment. And it would make the thing Doug Jones is running on, it's not that he wants to say, oh, well, I'm really one of you guys, I'm really a Republican. He does want to create this perception that he's the guy that marches to the beat of his own drum, that he is not beholden to party politics. And I think voting against the impeachment to remove from office would be a sign of that to voters in Alabama.
Because you're looking at this just, you know, pragmatically, in re-election, he's going to say, listen, I got to do everything I can. You know, most likely going to lose this seat, but if, you know, I got to take the vote this way to go down punching. I mean, there's no change to the outcome, so let him do this, right? I mean, if you're Democrat leadership.
Yeah, but, I mean, there's right now, as you head into a presidential election, keep in mind, Doug Jones is supporting Joe Biden, and there's a lot of talk about what Doug Jones, who looks like he's on his way to not get reelected, but, you know, we're supposed to keep an open mind, but let's just assume, let's play the odds here, that he loses in 2020. I think that's a safe assumption. What does he do? And, you know, there's the rumors that he wants to go be Joe Biden's attorney general. He wants to work in the Biden administration. What does a no vote on impeachment mean for that? Does it keep him in the running to be in the cabinet? And so there's another game here other than playing for the long shot reelection, if you could follow along.
There's a theory that we came across yesterday, Jeff, and I saw it from thefederalist.com and haven't really been able to find much more information, but you might know. They say that there might be a third option for Democrats, and that's to go ahead and vote to impeach today, but not take it any further, not actually let it get to Senate for the trial. Do you know if that's actually an option?
I would be surprised if, I mean, yeah, it's always an option, but I would be surprised if that happened. But the fear is that we know how it's going to wind up in the Senate, and Democrats don't necessarily want to give Donald Trump an acquittal. If you can't, you're innocent until proven guilty. If you can't prove the guilt through a body of the Senate, then he's going to be declared innocent. That is the fear from Democrats. It's something, give him something to run on. That's why I'm a little surprised they didn't tinker more with the idea of censure. Here's the problem, guys. For that to happen, I think it would really upset the Democratic base. They have painted themselves in such a corner that they got to do something about big, bad orange man. If they go this track, it looks like they're whipping out.
All right. Can you hang on for a couple minutes?
Sure.
All right. Coming right back. More with Jeff Poore. We'll talk about some state politics as well. discussion the other day. I guess Monday we were talking about the fact that maybe Del Marsh doesn't stay on as Senate pro tem. And what about this Supreme Court race? A lot to talk about in Alabama politics, and we'll do that when we get back right here on Mobile Mornings. It's 8:30. News is next.
Mobile Mornings on FM Talk 106.5. Time to check in with Mitch McConnell from McConnell Automotive. Hey, Mitch.
All right, Dalton. Happy Wednesday morning to you.
Hey, same to you. Hey, we're coming up on the end of the year here, end of the decade, actually, and you guys have some great deals at McConnell.
Yeah, Dalton, you know, not only are these the best deals and discounts we've had in all year, is that realistically the last 5 years, buddy. So people out there listening, they really got to move fast, Dalton, because the pick of the litter is still here, and Yukons and Sierras, everything everybody wants, Acadias. And the least amount we have off, Dalton, clearly marked on our website and on our vehicles on the lots, 15% off a Yukon. That's like $13,000, bro.
Wow.
So it's exciting. You know, we've got over 20% off a Sierra. That's that six-function tailgate everybody's loving. And these are the kind of deals, if people like to negotiate, they need to go to another dealership, because you don't have to. You know, you just get these massive discounts. And Dalton, compared to last month and next month, another $3,000 or $4,000 off, you know, almost every Buick and GMC, and that's enough to pay for some Christmas presents, buddy.
It sure is. Thank you, Mitch.
Y'all have a great one, Dalton.
All right, you too. That's Mitch McConnell. Go see him at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65.
Right, 8:37, and continue our conversation with Jeff Poor. And if you want to reach out on Twitter, where do they find you, Jeff?
Twitter.com/Jeff_Poor.
All right, let's talk about some Alabama politics. And one part, of course, is Alabama. One foot in Alabama, one foot in Washington, and that is the Senate Republican primary. We mentioned Doug Jones earlier. What about those Republicans that would like to take that seat? What do you think now? I mean, you think is there enough polling information that makes you think Jeff Sessions has a substantial lead, or is it just a, remember we talked last week, maybe it's just a couple points, but now there's polls out showing maybe it's more than that.
I think it's most 8-9 points, probably between 5 and 8-9 points. That's probably where it is over Tuberville. Bradley Byrd's starting to throw some punches. He was in Marion County in Hamilton on Saturday, went after his opponents. I had him on radio yesterday. He was actually did radio all over the state yesterday and was throwing some punches at his two opponents, which I find maybe a change in tactics now that we're getting as we head into January. He's going to have to start going more aggressive after those opponents to even have a chance here. I think the door's closed on Roy Moore. I think with less people in the field, just less with John Merrill not in the field, that makes it really difficult for him to get to second place to be in a runoff. I think the door's shut on him. But I do think Sessions right now is the lead dog. But I'll say this about this, and this is very, very important. The March 3rd primary is going to be a totally different election from what happens in April, 4 weeks later after that primary. You have a lot of different things. You have a totally different electorate. And I would be concerned if I was Jeff Sessions, because if you're polling under 50%, and you're essentially the incumbent, everybody knows who Jeff Sessions is. He was a U.S. Senator in Alabama for 20 years. You know this guy, but there's enough people in the electorate that say, you know, I want to go in a different direction. I want to try some of these other candidates out. That tells me that it's not a lock for Jeff Sessions. And then when you, and there's a lot of anti-Jeff, and I think unfairly, but a lot of anti-Jeff Sessions sentiment in the Republican voter block there. So you get into that runoff. That runoff's going to have an extremely low turnout. No Trump on the ballot. 4 weeks, people just voted already a month earlier. And you're going to have a different electorate that's more motivated by the politics and knows what's going on. And I think these people that are motivated by their anger toward Jeff Sessions for the way he handled his time as Attorney General are going to make a difference. So I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that Jeff Sessions is the Republican nominee for that reason.
Okay, it is. It's interesting. And what you're saying is basically the general public, you know, shows up to vote on the primary, the Republican right. general public, people that don't live, eat, and breathe Republican politics. They're Republican, and they know it's time to vote, and they go do their civic duty. Compared to the people that show back up for the primary, they are the they're the people that are inside. I mean, they are idealistic, right? I mean, it's kind of a different segment of those voters.
Here's how I would compare it. Remember back in 2017, you had the first round of elections with Mo Brooks and Roy Moore, Luther Strange, everybody else, Trip Pittman, that was on that stage. That's number one. But number two, that runoff 6 weeks later at the time, not a whole lot of turnout. Really worked in Roy Moore's advantage. Luther Strange tried to carpet bomb the Birmingham market. I think that's exactly, and I would advise the Sessions folks, not that they're listening to me, not to make the same mistakes Luther Strange did in 17, but he seems to have that same kind of mentality. They're going to raise a bunch of money and just flood the airwaves. But that is what I think is the electorate's going to look more like, is that special election after the primary in 2017, where you're just not going to have a lot of people want to come out to vote 4 weeks later.
All right. What about, you mentioned 2017, makes me think about outside money and influence coming in during the primary portion. Do you see, number one, whether it be Club for Growth folks and their money or Senate Leadership Fund or any of these other groups coming in and meddling before the primary vote?
I tell you what's going to be really weird is seeing the Chamber of Commerce back Jeff Sessions, the BCA, or any of those guys backing Jeff Sessions, who has opposed all their efforts at immigration over the years. That will be interesting. But what will happen is I suspect Mitch McConnell, Richard Shelby will call in some favors, and they will back Sessions. That's the NRA. Other groups will play. You'll see exactly like the Luther Strange, the big Washington, D.C., powerful trade groups or whatever will get behind Jeff Sessions, because that's who Mitch McConnell and the leadership, John Cornyn and those guys, they want Sessions in the Senate. They don't want to deal with a Tommy Tuberville. They don't know what he's going to be like. He could be crazy man and get up there, and they have to answer questions about him. They know what they're getting with Sessions. It's like the evil you know and the evil you don't know. That's the problem with Tommy Tuberville, I think, for a lot of those guys, and why they're so heavily invested in General Sessions.
Sessions has now been in the race for 2 months, and outside of the very beginning, before he even jumped in, we haven't seen the president speak about Sessions at all. Do you think he has too much on his plate right now, or do you think he's waiting for a certain time to bring up that old that old? You know, they weren't getting along while he was attorney general? Or do you think the hatchet's kind of buried now?
I asked Congressman Byrne about this yesterday. I had him on the show, and he spent a lot of time with Donald Trump. Obviously, we saw him at the Alabama game, but he had another Oval Office appearance last week or the week before last, if I'm not mistaken. And Congressman Byrne says, just wait. It's early. Things going on right now, but don't think that Donald Trump is not going to say anything about the Alabama Senate race.
Yeah, we'll talk about that more. Congressman Byrne, noon today on Midday Mobile, and we'll ask him about that. All right, and in the runoff, this is the game. This is just like parlor games here, but when I got Jeff on, I like to do this. In the runoff, Jeff Sessions versus Tommy Tuberville, Jeff Sessions versus Bradley Byrne. Do you see any kind of any preference there?
It's going to be, it depends on who you are, obviously, right?
Well, if you're Sessions camp, who do you rather see in the runoff?
I think you'd rather see Bradley Byrne. I say that just because you're not having to deal with that outsider element that I think is very energized within the Republican Party. I mean, that's where the energy is. That's where the sentiment is, and we don't need more Washington guys. It's going to be really weird if it's a Bradley Byrne versus Jeff Sessions runoff. How odd will it be to see Bradley Byrne run as the quote-unquote outsider and Jeff Sessions run as the quote-unquote insider
guy?
Everything is going to be upside down and backwards,
yeah.
But I think that will be the tactic, because Sessions is such a national figure that he's going to be portrayed as the swamp guy.
All right, shifting gears to a couple of state-specific races, or let's talk about one specifically that doesn't get a lot of discussion, although I know you had State Senator Cam Ward on the other day on your show. he's been on here talking about prison reform and all that for a long time with me, but now he's making a run at the Alabama Supreme Court. And talk about how his chances are and where kind of the money's lining up. Who's lining up behind whom?
Well, as it appears to be right now, the trial lawyers are the ones backing Cam Ward for that race. And I think the business community, they're flirting with the idea of getting behind Brian Taylor, but it could be Greg Shaw, who is the incumbent, who we haven't heard from. We haven't heard from Taylor or Greg Shaw that much. And it looks like Cam Ward's really outworking these guys like 5-1. Because mm-hmm. if you drive up and down 65, as I have in the last few months, you see Cam Ward signs all up and down between Huntsville and Mobile. You see Cam Ward stuff everywhere. And he goes, when I had him on the show, he was in Russell County in Phoenix City doing an event. When's the last time you saw a statewide candidate do anything in Phoenix City, Alabama, right there?
Right.
It's been a while, I would say. And I think that's... But to me, that seems to be, he seems to be the guy that's running like he wants to win it. The one thing that's going to come back to haunt him, obviously, he has a personal history that he's going to have to deal with, and that gets brought up. And that will be something he will have to work through. But I also think there's a lot of people in law enforcement and a lot of these prosecutors that don't like the way he's going about his prison reform ideas. I think because if early on Senator Ward really was big on the idea that we needed to reform the sentencing guidelines, that was his thing, that sentencing guidelines were the key to prison reform, that new prisons were like 15-20% off.
But he did say we had to build, I'm gonna be fair, he did say we had to build new prisons because technology brought down the number of Department of Corrections employees you had to have, therefore save the money. I mean, he did
right,
say.
Right, right, right. Okay. But that's all fair. But the sentencing stuff is key here, guys, because there is a lot of people, including Attorney General Marshall, there's some prosecutors inside the Alabama legislature, one of those is Matt Simpson right across the bay there in Daphne, that don't like this idea of pushing sentencing reform. They don't want to do anything with sentencing reform. They think that's, you know, after the trouble with the Board of Pardons and paroles and all of that, that, you know, a sentence is a sentence. The law is the law. We don't need to start tinkering with sentencing, making felonies misdemeanors. And here's where the other big push from the opponents is going to be. If you do that, you start sending these guys convicted of felonies. Instead, you'll be sending, instead of sending them to a state facility, guess what? You're going to send them to the county jail. Who has to pick up the tab at the county level? I mean, it's the people in each county. The Association of Counties is not going to go for that either. So one thing I would say I'd notice with him, he's kind of changing his tune a little bit to, we need to do workforce development in prisons and give these guys a skill for when they get out. Perfectly fine. But I think the sentencing stuff, it's kind of something he will really try to run with, and there's a lot of pushback against it.
All right, and when I say State Senator Pro Tem, my brain automatically makes me say Del Barsh. He's been in that position so long, but he may be, what, stepping down?
Yeah, that's what it sounds like, that he's, you know, he's done it for a while, and we could see Senate Leader Pro Tem Greg Reed is the rumor now, and that seems to be the done deal. Who is going to be the majority leader? Reed is the majority leader in the Senate right now. There's a lot of discussion about who fills that void, and the name you hear a lot from people is Clay Schofield, who represents like the Gunnersville area up there in Marshall County. That he could be the heir to that. So Del Barsh could step aside. I don't know what really happens there, but that is very true, that he's looking to make an exit from that role.
Somebody was telling me that Schofield is friendly with Governor Ivey. So that, I mean, is that true from what you understand?
I mean, I think most people in the Alabama
Senate, you know what I mean. I'm not saying enemy, but I'm saying that he's close.
With the exception of your guy, Chris Elliott.
Yes.
I think most people have a good relationship with the governor on the Republican side. But that seems to be the case. He's really big on this rural broadband stuff. If you ever get the opportunity to have him on and talk about that, I know that's a big issue for you, but he's a good guy to talk about those sort of problems, the rural issues in Alabama, which I think would be refreshing. Not that Aniston's like the metropolis of Alabama, but having somebody from a rural place does kind of make it a little different in the legislature.
All right. Well, lots to talk about as we tick down. Heck, it's, beginning of February they get started back in Montgomery.
it'll be a busy time, especially with that Senate race going on at the same time, which is just really going to be, I think, a lot going on all at once.
We're lucky to have Jeff filling us in, and we appreciate your time. And, folks, once again, best place to reach out is going to be, what, Twitter?
Twitter.com/Jeff_Poor.
Hey, man, thank you. We'll check back soon.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right, 8:50. We'll run to the news and coming right back to wrap it up on this Wednesday. Now we're talking quite possibly the best contemporary Christmas song.
Yeah, you love this one, don't you?
Yeah, The Waitresses and Christmas Wrapping. Man, that's a jam right here. 8:55, FM Talk 106.5, and it is Mobile Mornings on this Wednesday. Glad to have you along. 343-0106, that's our phone number. That's the text line. That's how you get in touch with us. And also our website, FMTalk1065.com. where you can take part in what has become, this is the third year, so a tradition.
That's right.
Tradition around FM Talk 106.5. Our Alabamian of the Year. You did all the nomination. Y'all nominated the people, places, things, groups, entities, critters, whatever, that went into the list, and now we vote them through the end of the month when we arrive at the winner for Alabamian of the Year.
Mm-hmm. And today we've got four new candidates up there, and this time literally. You can vote to move on. This is the third bracket of five this week, and we've got four options for you. Governor Ivey, who we just spent a good bit of time talking about with Jeff Poor. Also, Jeff Sessions, again, talked about him quite a bit this hour. Nancy Worley, who was left off the docket this morning, which is rare these days. Mm-hmm. And then CBD, a consumer item that I would say took Alabama by storm this year. So the top two vote-getters in this move on into the second round, and right now CBD in the lead. With 42% of the vote, Jeff Sessions is in second, followed by Ivy and Worley.
All right, vote online, front page of FMTalk1065.com. And let me tell you, as it is a week out from Christmas, I've got a gift that is the gift we all want, and that's more time in our life, right? How about if you got the gift of clean and the gift of time at the same time? Well, you do when you have the maids come and work at your home. Maids, they're referred for a reason, and I'm referring them to you for about 25 reasons or more. Maids have done fantastic work at our house, got started back in October, and that was already great. And now through the holiday season, it's been truly a treat to have a fantastic clean house, top to bottom, perfect work. Even like I told you, they worked around the elves on the shelf. They even cleaned around the elves on the shelf. They do great work. And what we have now is a clean house and the gift of time. So all the time we usually spent cleaning the house, we've been able to enjoy doing stuff like putting extra Christmas lights up. If you look at the picture I have on Twitter, I put some more lights up, spending more time with family, and we're ready to invite family into our home, whether they just stop by to say hello or we have Christmas party or Christmas dinner. It is a great gift this holiday season and anytime. The gift of time and the gift of clean. You get that with the maid. And get a free estimate now. You can get that free estimate when you call 344-6626. Call 344-6626 and ask for a free estimate. They'll come out, look at your place, and hook you up and get moving. The maids, they're referred for a reason, and that reason is time and clean. Believe me, they're fantastic. Once again, get that free estimate or just Google the maids. And the phone number one more time, 344-6626. All right, Mike Gallagher on the way next.
Yeah, he's here. And really quickly got an answer for why Samuel L. Jackson was in town. Our friend Cherish Lombard at WKRG, says he was in town filming part of a documentary about the transatlantic slave trade. Of course, with the Clotilda being discovered here this year, Samuel L. Jackson in town to film a documentary.
I'm pretty sure he was in town to promote Top Golf and trains. That's what I heard.
That's what I'm sticking
like
with.
Like Mike said, he was here to film a sequel to Snakes on a Plane or something like that. It'd be Snakes on a Train. That's what I heard.